admitted everything on the spot.
Following the call with President Trump, the member of my staff asked Ambassador Sondland what President Trump thought about Ukraine. Ambassador Sondland responded that President Trump cares more about the investigations of Biden, which Giuliani was pressing for.
I want to read a section from Holmes's sworn testimony, his opening statement. In particular, I asked Ambassador Sondland, this is David Holmes speaking, if it was true that the president did not give a excuse the language about Ukraine. Ambassador Sondland agreed that the president did not give a about Ukraine.
He literally hung up the phone and said Trump doesn't give a about Ukraine. He only cares about investigating the Bidens. He just admitted it.
Holmes' testimony is also, it also showed that Trump's priority was not on national security, but investigating the Bidens. Trump even asked Sondland, so he's going to do the investigation? To which Sondland replied, he's going to do it, adding that Zelensky will do anything you ask him to. Anything? Is this like a genie situation? Then I want unlimited wishes and unlimited popcorn shrimp.
And then today the AP reported that a second U.S. official had also heard Trump's call with Sondland, and yet when Trump was asked yesterday about that phone call, he pretended he didn't know anything about it.
There was one moment where Ambassador Bill Taylor recounted a conversation that an aide of his overheard, in which the aide says that he overheard you say to Sondland, how are things going with the proceeding with the investigations? Is that correct? And can you fill in some more?
I know nothing about that. First time I've heard it.
Do you recall having a conversation with
Sondland? I don't recall. No, not at all. Not even a little bit.
Not only did Trump try to extort the president of Ukraine during his own phone call with that country's president, Trump was also calling other key players in the scheme and checking in with them, too. In fact, during his deposition on Friday, Holmes also said that he overheard Sondland and Trump discussing the pressure campaign directed toward Ukrainian President Zelensky. And what he heard was both very colorful and very damning.
I heard Ambassador Sondland greet the president and explain that he was calling from Kyiv. I heard President Trump then clarify that Ambassador Sondland was in Ukraine. Ambassador Sondland replied, yes, he was in Ukraine, and went on to state that President Zelensky loves your ass.
That's right. Trump's henchman actually told him Zelensky loves your ass. I mean, it's classic bad guy talk. The House was also conducting its second day of public impeachment hearings with the former ambassador to Ukraine, Marie Yovanovitch. Basically, Yovanovitch was the subject of a smear campaign by Giuliani and was abruptly pushed out by Trump because they knew she would be an obstacle to their corrupt scheme. She's a career Foreign Service officer whose credibility is unquestioned by anyone in either party. So naturally, as she was testifying, Trump decided to attack her.
The president attacking former U.S. ambassador to Ukraine, Marie Yovanovitch, during her public testimony, tweeting in part,
everywhere Marie Yovanovitch went turned bad. She started off in Somalia, had that go. Then fast forward to Ukraine, where the new Ukrainian president spoke unfavorably about her in my second phone call with him. Now she's back in the United States, and the president is being impeached. Coinky-dink, way to go, Marie.
Everywhere she went turned bad. You've gone bankrupt 6 times and botched everything from casinos to your charity to your dumbass businesses. You made a vodka so bad no one would drink. Vodka! How do you screw up vodka? Only Trump. Only Trump could take something that's supposed to be flavorless and make it taste like But the worst part is, Trump tweeted this while she was testifying. He tried to intimidate an impeachment witness in real time. So she responded in real time. And not only was it a bad look for Trump, but legal analysts also suggested his tweet might have been a crime.
The president.
It's right behind me? Is that why you look so shocked?
No, this is just how my eyes look. The president just sent a tweet.
A tweet?
Let the record show that the president is intimidating the witness.
Intimidating? If the president wanted to intimidate you, he'd shoot you in the face in the middle of Fifth Avenue.
Okay, and then would you impeach him?
Well, I'd have to look at the facts, but no.
As we sit here testifying, the president is attacking you on Twitter. What effect do you think that has on other witnesses' willingness to come forward and expose wrongdoing?
Well, it's very intimidating.
It's designed to intimidate, is it not?
I mean, I can't speak to what the president is trying to do, but I think the effect is to be intimidating.
I think there's a good argument that given all the circumstances here, given the timing right in the middle of this person's testimony, given the nature of the tweet, that it could be witness tampering or witness retaliation.
This could fit into federal laws that are broadly defined in terms of witness tampering.
And that does raise the possibility of witness intimidation and witness tampering as a new charge here.
This whole hearing turned on a dime when the president tweeted about her real time. Now, that enabled Schiff to then characterize that tweet as intimidating the witness or tampering with the witness, which is a crime, adding essentially an article of impeachment real time.
That's right. Trump added another article of impeachment in real time. At this point, he should just start doing DVD director's commentary during the hearings.
As you can see here, that's Marie Yovanovitch. I pushed her out so I could bribe the president of Ukraine. That was a fun scene. And, here's Jim Jordan. We pulled a prank on set where we stole Jim's jacket.
All right, after that testimony, let's all put politics aside and enjoy a delightful snack.
We're just a refreshing beverage. It's clear Trump used his leverage to send Ukraine a message. He wanted some dirt on Joe.
Okay, let's stay focused on refreshment. We're not here to editorialize. Isn't that right, bag of popcorn?
I'm just a buttery snack food. But after all the testimony I viewed, I'd say the president is screwed. He'll probably try to pardon himself.
Fine, whatever. Say what you want.
Still, if you're a Republican, I get it. It's just so hard to say. Is Trump innocent or is he guilty? I mean, all we have so far is a sixth Trump associate convicted of a crime, two more indicted associates saying they were on a secret mission for him, his lawyer under criminal investigation, Trump himself committing witness tampering, the whistleblower's account claiming the president had clearly committed a criminal act, the notes from the call in which Trump mentions the Bidens multiple times, the part of the call where Trump tells the Ukrainian president, I would like you to do us a favor, the president's chief of staff literally confessing on national television, Rudy Giuliani going on TV and bragging about what he was doing, and like a bunch of witnesses saying, yes, there was a quid pro quo. I'm sorry, that's not enough to convict. I mean, just take that quote where Trump told the president of Ukraine, I would like you to do us a favor. We just have no way of knowing what he really meant. It's not like Trump has said himself on camera for the entire world to see that he wanted the president of Ukraine to start a major investigation into the Bidens.
What exactly did you hope Zelensky would do about the Bidens after his phone call?
Well, I would think that if they were honest about it, they'd start a major investigation into the Bidens. It's a very simple answer. They should investigate the Bidens.
Damn it, Donald, why are you so coy? But in case you still needed more evidence tying Trump directly to the scheme to extort a foreign country to investigate his political rivals by dangling hundreds of millions of dollars in taxpayer money, you got that evidence from last week's impeachment hearings. Multiple witnesses tied Trump and his lawyer, Rudy Giuliani, directly to the quid pro quo.
Remember how last week there was a woman testifying in front of Congress and Donald Trump, being the stable genius we know he is, decided to go on Twitter and attack her in writing? And then everyone, including a lot of his supporters, said that was a very wrong thing to do. Well, guess what? Yesterday, Tweety Gonzalez pulled out his little orange thumbs and he did it again. This time he attacked a woman who works for Mike Pence.
I found the July 25th phone call unusual because, in contrast to other presidential calls I had observed, it involved discussion of what appeared to be a domestic political matter.
And it is difficult to defend all that, which is not to say that Republicans have not been trying hard. The first technique is to insist that there is nothing to see here because nothing happened.
Attempted bribery isn't in the Constitution.
Attempted murder. Now, honestly, what is that? Do they give a Nobel Prize for attempted chemistry, do they?
Remember, Ukraine got its military aid. It was 14 days delayed. Big deal. And remember, Ukraine never made any public statement about any investigation.
So wait, hold on. She's saying because the deal didn't go through, it didn't matter. But a crime doesn't stop being a crime if it doesn't work. If you're trying to blow up an airliner and your vest doesn't go off, you don't get to go, well, no harm, no foul, and then sit there watching Detective Pikachu for the rest of the flight. Also, Also, Ukraine only got its aid after the House started asking questions, and the Ukrainian president was days away from publicly announcing investigations, but cancelled his announcement at the last minute after this story started breaking. So the nothing to see here defense is pretty shaky. Now, Republicans' next tactic is to claim that the only evidence against Trump is hearsay. It's a point that Jim Jordan tried to drive home by reading a section of Sondland's testimony out loud.
Ambassador Taylor recalls that Mr. Morrison told Ambassador Taylor that I told Mr. Morrison that I conveyed this message to Mr. Yarmak on September 1st, 2019 in connection with Vice President Pence's visit to Warsaw and a meeting with President Zelensky. We got six people having four conversations in one sentence, and you just told me this is where you got your clear understanding.
Well, yeah, of course that sounded convoluted. Everything is hardest to understand when you rush through it like you're listing side effects at the end of a Lunesta commercial. It's the same way that I tend to say a lot of words fairly quickly on this show, and jokes can occasionally slip by you, like they're Greta Thunberg and you're guarding Jeffrey Epstein's prison cell. But that doesn't mean the joke didn't make sense. It just means I need to slow down for a moment so everyone can realise that she didn't even care who was on the flight log. She just hated that he flew so often. The point with the whole hearsay argument, though, is that multiple people have gone on record saying the president was pressuring Zelensky for his own political gain, including his own chief of staff, Mick Mulvaney, who did so on camera. So, yes, the fact that there was a quid pro quo is all hearsay, in that you hear people say it all the time. That is why they've come up with a fallback defense. Yes, there was a quid pro quo, but you know what? Those are actually totally fine. Here is a Republican county chair giving that defense a spin.
Presidents make deals. They kind of twist arms, you know, not violently, but they're kind of like, you know, I'll scratch your back if you scratch mine.
You don't think he's opened himself up for today, like he put himself in a little bit of hot water, creating this, the reasons for this hearing?
No, I really don't. I don't know. That's Trump. It's like, do we want Trump not to be Trump?
Yes. Yes. So badly. I want Trump not to be Trump more than I want anything else in the world right now. I would take any kind of Freaky Friday situation. I would honestly be happy if he switched bodies with a raccoon. And honestly, Trump probably would too. He wouldn't have to deal with the impeachment inquiry, and he'd get to keep his all-trash diet. It's a win-win. But second, there is an extremely obvious problem with that argument, because of course presidents make deals. Yes, but they are supposed to conduct American foreign policy in a way that benefits the country, not themselves. It's why Teddy Roosevelt's foreign policy mantra was speak softly and carry a big stick, and not speak softly and try to get as many sticks as possible for your personal stick collection. Now, technique three is to pretend that the details of this scandal are just too boring to care about to make people disengage. Watch Fox Business host Stuart Varney try and sell that idea.
It was unutterably boring, wasn't it? Did you watch any of this stuff? I mean, with Richard Nixon, there was a break-in. With Bill Clinton, there was sex in the Oval Office.
Yeah.
With Trump, it's a phone call to Ukraine.
Right.
What the devil is that all about?
Right.
I'm so sorry this gigantic abuse of power isn't sexy enough for you, Stuart. Although, I will say, if robbery and sex are what you want, the Russia scandal had hacked emails and Trump did pay $130,000 to a porn star. Do either of those scandals turn your crank, Stu? By all means, pick the Trump scandal you prefer. The beauty is, there's one for everyone. And the final tactic here is to claim that this story is just too complicated for people to understand.
Well, there's no quid or pro. You can't keep saying quid pro quo, right? Even though I don't even know what that means, really. I don't know what language quid pro quo is.
It's Latin, and okay.
Is it Latin?
Yes, but the truth is, this story isn't actually that complicated at all. The president, by all available evidence, seems to have withheld foreign aid that had been approved by Congress to get something that would benefit him personally. That is a bribe. That is a shakedown. And White House officials clearly knew his pressure tactics were wrong because they immediately hid information about it in a top-secret server. And that isn't boring. It's not hearsay. It's certainly not standard practice for presidents. And it's really important that Trump be held to account here. Because if he gets away with this, we are sending a message that he can essentially get away with anything. And if that is the case, to paraphrase an unqualified diplomat, you better love Trump's ass.
Republicans are ignoring much of what the witnesses have told Congress, but they're also ignoring some of the language in that presidential summary of the call between Zelensky and Donald Trump.
Are you a member of the GOP?
Tired of all the damning testimony you don't want to hear? Introducing Bose fact-canceling headphones. State-of-the-art, ergonomically designed, and perfect for any GOP member who wants to ignore highly corroborated truths from highly credible witnesses. Simply place the fact-canceling headphones on a primary digit, insert them, and activate the sound-canceling feature. Bose fact-canceling headphones. If you can't hear it, it didn't happen.
When you strip away everything, what we have learned over the past month is this is one thing, which is for the first time in American history, an American president has used taxpayer dollars to persuade, bribe, extort another president for information that will help him get reelected. That was the initial accusation, and that's what's been proven over and over again with all these witnesses.
This whole thing would make for the shortest episode of Serial in history. Hello, I'm Sarah Koenig. On this episode, my guest is Rudy Giuliani. Rudy, did you do it?
Of course I did!
This has been Serial. Trump has pulled this move so many times, and every time we found out that he's lying. Remember when the news first broke that his lawyer, Michael Cohen, had illegally paid off Stormy Daniels to cover up Trump's affair with her? Trump denied knowing anything about it, but we later found out that Trump had reimbursed Cohen and orchestrated the whole thing. In fact, we literally saw a copy of the check Trump wrote to Cohen. We already have all the evidence we could possibly need, and there's still more witnesses waiting to testify. Republicans have no defense. All they can do during these hearings is perform for Trump to earn his approval. I wouldn't be surprised if at some point this week a GOP congressman looked directly into the camera and said, President Trump, the Republican Party
loves your ass.
Not so fast.
Mitch McConnell?
That's right. And the Senate has voted. Acquitted.
But this matter isn't even before the Senate yet.
Oh, sorry for the spoiler. Just tell me when I'm supposed to say it. Acquitted.
Not so fast.
Now, Rudy, you're facing the wrong direction.
Where is it? Oh, where the cameras are. Not so fast.
You have a new revelation, too?
No, I meant not so fast, but don't talk so fast. I'm having trouble understanding what's happening. Normally, I watch Fox News in slow motion with the sound turned up to 100.
A ridiculous melodrama that's somehow less crazy than what's really happening in our government.
Gordon Sondland told me Trump was withholding aid to get political dirt on Biden. And I rarely say this as a diplomat, but I told him that was cuckoo doo-doo nutsack bananas.
Not so fast!
Ambassador Gordon Sondland?
That's right. I'm part of this too! And I know that I said in earlier testimony that there was no quid pro quo, but that's because I had amnesia. And now the amnesia is fine again. And I remember there was a quid pro quo.
When my father was 47 years old, he left behind his entire life and the only home he had ever known to start over in the United States so his three sons could have a better and safer lives. Dad, I'm sitting here today in the U.S. Capitol, talking to our elected professionals, is proof that you made the right decision 40 years ago to leave the Soviet Union and come here to the United States of America in search of a better life for our family. Do not worry. I will be fine for telling the truth.
I'm struck by that word, don't worry, that phrase, do not worry, you addressed to your dad. They would have worried if you were putting yourself up against the President of the United States. Is that right?
He deeply worried about it because in his context, there was the ultimate risk.
And why do you have confidence that you can do that and tell your dad not to worry?
Congressman, because this is America. This is the country I've served and defended, that all of my brothers have served, and here, right matters.
Preceding show was recorded at Wave Farms WGXC in the Hudson Valley in New York State.
There's just one thing that you need to know. Trump said, do us a favor, though.
Everybody!
There's just one thing that you need to know. Trump said, do us a favor, though.
And with that, I yield back the balance of my time.
Thank you, Ranking Member Nunez. I will now recognize myself. Okay, Ms. Williams, Lieutenant Colonel Vitamita Vegeman, thank you both for your testimonies today in this impeachment inquiry into the 45th President of the United States, Donald Jessica Trump. I would now like to read a portion of the July 25th phone call between Trump and Ukrainian President Zelensky. Trump says, "We would like you to do us a favor, though. There's lots of talk about Joe Biden's son. Also, we have reason to believe there was meddling in the 2016 election by some terrible people, very bad people, a woman named Chrissy Teigen and a very hairy man, Alex Baldwin. Terribly, terribly hairy. Whatever you can do. Hang on, I have to make another call real quick. Yes, give me a 10-piece tenders with extra biscuits and two large sides." Well, then he just orders chicken. Did you find this call unusual?
Yes.
Yes.
And is it true, Ambassador Taylor, that you were conflicted about the role of the president's personal lawyer?
I was concerned about Rudy Giuliani's statements.
Honey, could you kick it up a notch? We're on television.
And so by the end of June, I had begun to hear references to investigations.
Yeah. Really sell it to me, honey. Give it some pizzazz.
As something that would have to happen prior to the meeting that...
Here, maybe wear this.
...that President Trump had offered to President Zelensky.
You know what? Let me help you out. Devin, give me my note, please.
His phone calls ain't as perfect as the picture that he paints. He's full of so much he's turning brown. We've read the memorandums and the transcripts and complaints. And let's be real, we all see what went down. His conduct was unethical, we know. But when it comes to influencing foreign government officials by withholding military aid until they agree to investigate his personal opponents to serve his own political agenda, he's a hoe.
Do you take a look at that call? It was perfect.
A very innocent call.
He's just a girl who quid pro quo. Blackmail's his favorite response. He'll badger any friend or foe until he gets what he wants. When it comes to foreign policy, he says his correspondence is top shelf.
It was beautiful.
But it's really just a fallacy. He's only interested in himself. He's just a fool who'll gladly throw any old country a bone, long as they bow to his throne. Since he can't win on his own, he'll quit.
And now the impeachment begins.
What you gonna do when Zelensky comes calling? Your numbers are a-falling. What you gonna do? Supposing that you know that he's possibly hiding some dirt on Joe Biden. What you gonna do? What you gonna do when Ambassador Sondland corroborates what we already know? What you gonna do when Zelensky called?
Gave a quid pro quo.
Girl.
He's just a braggadocio to any foreign ally.
Did you take a look at that call? It was perfect.
When Ukraine called, he said hello, just when he should have said
до побачення.
When he recognized a rivalry, he told them that he wouldn't give a buck till they bend it to his bribery, which turns out is impeachable as f-. He throws a fit when whistles blow. He's just a petulant kid. He'll gladly pro quo or quid. He'll say he won't, but he did a quid. A pro quo.
Quid pro quo.
Girl.
There's just one thing that you need to know. Trump said, do us a favor, though.
There's just one thing that you need to know. Trump said, do us a favor, though.
The additional memory that you have gained over the past few weeks from reading the testimony of others based on their notes and reviewing your own documents, you have remembered a lot more.
Yeah, what triggered my memory was someone's reference to ASAP Rocky.
What's my name?
ASAP Rocky.
What's my name?
ASAP Rocky. Everyone was in the loop.
They know.
Chief of Staff Mulvaney.
They know.
Secretary Perry. Giuliani.
They know my girl, my ex.
Vice President Pence. Again, everyone's in the loop.
They know.
I emailed Secretary Pompeo.
It's me.
Secretary Pompeo replied.
I saw.
I spoke by phone with President Trump.
The devil.
Was there a quid pro quo?
Yeah.
In mid-August, it became clear to me that Giuliani's efforts to gin up politically motivated investigations were now infecting U.S. engagement with Ukraine, leveraging President Zelensky's desire for a White House meeting.
Following the call with President Trump, the member of my staff asked Ambassador Sondland what President Trump thought about Ukraine. Ambassador Sondland responded that President Trump cares more about the investigations of Biden, which Giuliani was pressing for.
And now the president in real time is attacking you. It's designed to intimidate, is it not?
I mean, I can't speak to what the president is trying to do, but I think the effect is to be intimidating.
I found the July 25th phone call unusual because, in contrast to other presidential calls I had observed, it involved discussion of what appeared to be a domestic political matter.
It was also clear that if Ukraine pursued an investigation into the 2016 elections, the Bidens and Burisma, it would be interpreted as a partisan play.
In hindsight, I now understand that others saw the idea of investigating possible corruption involving the Ukrainian company Burisma as equivalent to investigating former President, Vice President Biden.
What did Ambassador Sondland say to tell you that he told Mr. Yermak?
That the Ukrainians would have to have the prosecutor general make a statement with respect to the investigations as a condition of having the aid lifted.
Mr. Giuliani's requests were a quid pro quo for arranging a White House visit for President Zelensky. Mr. Giuliani demanded that Ukraine make a public statement announcing the investigations of the 2016 election, DNC server, and Burisma. Mr. Giuliani was expressing the desires of the President of the United States, and we knew these investigations were important to the President. Was there a quid pro quo? As I testified previously, with regard to the requested White House call and the White House meeting, the answer is yes. Everyone was in the loop.
Your staff at least gleaned from those conversations that the Ukrainian embassy was aware that there was some kind of a hold on the assistance.
Sir, the way I would phrase it is that there was some kind of an issue. Yes.
Ambassador Hale, then, therefore, are you saying Marie Yovanovitch is a dedicated and courageous patriot?
I endorse what you say exactly. She
served with grace and dignity in the face of the smear campaign?
Yes, she did.
It struck me one yesterday when you put up on the screen Ambassador Sondland's emails and who was on these emails, and he said, these are the people who need to know that he was absolutely right, because he was being involved in a domestic political errand, and we were being involved in national security foreign policy, and those two things had just diverged. And I did say to him, Ambassador Sondland, Gordon, I think this is all going to blow up, and here we are.
It became apparent that Mr. Giuliani was having a direct influence on the foreign policy agenda that the three amigos were executing on the ground in Ukraine. My recollection is that Ambassador Sondland stated, quote, damn it, Rudy. Every time Rudy gets involved, he goes and F's everything up.
There's just one thing that you need to know. Trump said, do us a favor, though.
Everybody.
There's just one thing that you need to know.
They want to say.
that, man. No.
He's the president.
Shut up, fool.
Radio detector truck, part of the trap. We can't let him intercept any of our messages. Could jeopardize our whole operation.
Papa Bear calling Goldilocks.
A message is coming through.
Come in, please. We have an...
What? You can't send any messages. Take my word for it.
It went dead.
Where did it come from?
I didn't get enough. I could not tell.
Will somebody please tell me what's going on?
The grads have got a radio detector truck parked outside the camp.
Hi, my name is Eddie. I'm here in Catskill. Community center. Come on to the community center. You're listening to
WGXA
90.7 FM.
ACRA. Let's listen to Nancy.
This is Carmen Borgia
and John Sturman. We're the hosts of Ukuleles Unleashed,
where you'll hear
and also
tiptoe through the tulips,
and also.
And some of this. There's always.
And remember this thing?
I'll grow in you.
Tune in the third Tuesday of each month from 8 to 10 p.m. for Ukuleles Unleashed
on WGXC 90.7 Acre.
WGXC underwriting support is provided by the First Presbyterian Church of Hudson, a faith community open to all. Whether you are single, married, divorced, gay, wealthy, poor, or no habla inglés, if you are just browsing, just woke up, or just got out of jail, it doesn't matter if you work on Wall Street or if you sleep on Wall Street, you belong. We love soccer moms, crying babies, vegans, hipsters, seekers and doubters, tourists and locals. All are welcome. Services held Sunday mornings at 10:45 a.m. You can find us on the web at firstpreshudson.org.
WGXC is made possible in part by the generous ongoing support of Fridman Gallery in New York, New York. WGXC's sustaining supporters are among the station's most dedicated listeners. They care deeply about creative community radio, and their investment helps to sustain WGXC as a public platform for information, experimentation, and engagement in Greene and Columbia counties. You too can become a sustaining supporter by going to wgxc.org/donate and designating an amount of your choosing. Thank you for your support.
You are listening to Transmission Arts Programming on WGXC 90.7 FM.
Ending the epidemic of transphobic violence. I'm Amy Goodman, host of Democracy Now! With Dennis Moynihan and our weekly Breaking the Sound Barrier podcast. Transgender Day of Remembrance falls annually on November 20th. Gwendolyn Ann Smith launched the commemoration in 1999 to remember Rita Hester, murdered a year earlier, and Chanel Pickett, murdered 3 years before that. No one I spoke with then knew who Chanel Pickett was, Smith reflected a dozen years later. She added, it seemed clear to me then that we were forgetting our past and were, to paraphrase George Santayana, doomed to repeat it. She launched TDOR, that's Transgender Day of Remembrance, to ensure that victims of anti-transgender violence weren't forgotten and to raise awareness of these hate crimes. In addition to mourning those who've been killed, trans activists and allies have organized Trans Awareness Week to precede the Day of Remembrance. As the advocacy group GLAAD describes it, the week is intended to spur, quote, action by educating the public about who transgender people are, sharing stories and experiences, and advancing advocacy around the issues of prejudice, discrimination, and violence that affect the transgender community, unquote. The violence is extreme. The organization Trans Respect versus Transphobia Worldwide tracks attacks on transgender people, publishing its Trans Murder Monitoring Report annually to coincide with the Day of Remembrance. From October 1, 2018 through September 30, 2019, they documented 331 murders of trans and gender diverse people around the world. Countries with the highest number of murders in the report were Brazil with 130, Mexico with 63, and the United States with 30. Overall, since 2008, when consistent documentation of these murders began, there have been 3,314 murders of transgender and gender diverse people worldwide. Of the 22 victims this calendar year recorded in Human Rights Campaign's report, A National Epidemic, Fatal Anti-Transgender Violence in the United States in 2019, which was just released this week, 91% were African-American women, 81% were under the age of 30, and 68% were in the South. Layleen Polanco, a transgender woman, died in New York City's notorious Rikers Island in June after she was arrested on misdemeanor charges, then jailed, unable to afford $500 bail. Placed in solitary confinement, she died from epilepsy that was exacerbated, her family says, by the neglect of jail officials. Chanel Lindsay was murdered in June and dumped in White Rock Lake in Dallas, 1 month after Malaysia Booker was murdered in the same city. Booker's murder came a month after a video went viral showing her being beaten by a mob. Both victims were transgender African-American women, and in both cases, suspects have been arrested. Booker's main assailant in the April assault video was also arrested, convicted, and sentenced to 300 days in jail. A 25-year-old transgender Salvadoran woman named Johanna Medina Leon died 4 days after being released from almost 2 months in Immigration and Customs Enforcement custody, during which she suffered steadily failing health. Her death exemplifies the intersectional array of prejudices and complex challenges transgender people of color confront on a daily basis.
Every time a trans woman, particularly a trans woman of color, dies, it is like you're always in anxiety. You're always in the lived reality that you could be next.
That's longtime transgender rights activist Lala B. Zanel on the Democracy Now! NewsHour. Describing this year's Day of Remembrance, she continued,
a lot of trans folks are reclaiming this space and reclaiming this moment because we've had such a hard year with this administration. And we are focusing on intent versus impact. We're really trying to curate events that are places of healing and places that are not trauma for trans folks.
A key goal of the Transgender Day of Remembrance and its preceding Awareness Week is to engage allies in the movement to end discrimination and violence. Lala B. explained,
the best way for you to combat that is for you to show up for trans folks, for you to call out transphobia when it happens in your neighborhood, for you to not misgender trans people, for you to honor and protect the ones that are in your neighborhood, for you to go to your schools and tell schools that you don't mind that trans folks go there and they need safe spaces to go to the bathroom and they're allowed to play in sports and they're allowed to go to the prom as their authentic selves. You show up to your job and you say, in this space, we're going to hire trans people. We're not going to allow transphobia. We're not going to discriminate against people. And when you see violence happening, you don't just pull out your phone and record, but you actually be a bystander to end the violence against trans women of color.
Lala B. Zanel's last call to action to intervene in an ongoing attack requires the most courage. But this is the commitment it will take to end this growing scourge of violence against transgender and gender nonconforming people. I'm Amy Goodman with Dennis Moynihan.
Next, we have an interview from
WOOC.
To learn more about this program, the Sanctuary for Independent Media, visit us online at mediasanctuary.org.
We're speaking now with Doug Bullock. Doug, is the Albany Clean Air Act, is that a response to the election, the outcome of the Queenman's election on November 5th?
No, that's a response to clean air in Albany County and the town of Queenman's. We realize what's happened in the town of Queenman's, that the Republicans want to reverse that a local law that had in Queens to regulate the pollution that's coming out of Lafarge and the plant. And we see that as a takeover from of that legislation directly, yes. But we don't. This is not a response. This was in the works for quite a while.
And what all is contained within the bill?
Well, what's contained is that you can't burn hazardous waste. You can't burn tires. And that's what Lafarge is planning to do. It's to burn tires. They have an arrangement with another company that collects the tires off the transportation of the Hudson River. And they're going to make burning those tires would be more profitable for them than producing cement. So they really want to do it bad because they can make more profit off of burning tires than they can out of even producing cement.
So they get paid to accept the tires to burn?
Oh, for sure, yeah.
And do you know how much they get paid to accept the tires?
Well, I'm not into the contract. They're making the contract with the distributor at the Port of Albany, and you'll have to look into that. But I imagine it's quite a bit of money. But, you know, from the calculations I've seen, it's an enormous amount of profit.
So has there been any pushback from Lafarge on this bill?
Yeah, as of today, yeah, there has been a pushback. They've taken over the town of Queens, you know, and that's Lafarge. And, you know, that's the Republican Party that has allowed that in Queens. So, you know, they've responded here, and it's a, you know, we have to respond back and make it a countywide anti-pollution law. We can't let Lafarge do what he used to do, make the entire town of Queens gray. So we have to get off of that kind of burning in these big kilns and these big incinerators.
And you say hazardous waste. Does that include things other than tires?
Oh, sure. They tried to burn garbage. They had a contract with the, a proposal with the state of Connecticut and Hartford in particular to burn their recycle waste, okay? Not just the waste, the recycle waste. And that would have been hazardous waste burning. That would have been the equivalent of what they've done in the Answers plant and how we had to get rid of it in Albany, New York. But that would have been much worse because the pollution that comes out of that is really dirty. Not as dirty as tires, but dirty and hazardous.
So tonight is a public hearing. Are there any other public hearings on the bill, and when will the vote be?
This will be the hearing. We hope to get it out of committee. If it gets out of committee, it'll be in December. But there's also another hearing tonight on straws, and I'm a co-signer on that also.
And that's to make straws upon request in Albany County?
Upon request only, because there's a waste here, and it's a throwaway waste, and we want to stop it. And, you know, when you go into a restaurant, you go into an eating establishment, you'll get the straws whether you ask for them or not. And it's kind of annoying, but it's also wasteful, and it's wasteful for the environment. So we've got a choose your straw local law.
And if the straw ban is, or the, not, I'm sorry, the straw ban, if the straw upon request piece is passed, do you see that expanding to reduce more single-use plastics in the future?
Yes, I do. It's a step towards that, for sure. And the air pollution law is a first step, too, for good air in Albany County. We've got a long way to go.
Okay, thank you, Doug.
You're welcome. Thanks.
Hi.
I
don't know, Carol said you wanted also to talk to me.
Yes.
Would you sign my petition?
Absolutely. And now we're here with Dustin Reedy, who's been elected to the Albany County Legislature, and his term will begin on January 1st.
Correct. Thanks for having me on, Alexis.
So you're just here in support of the Albany
Absolutely.
Clean Air Act tonight.
Yeah, I have a lot of friends who are activists who are working to push this through. And, you know, clean air, it's a county issue, it's a state issue, it's an issue for everyone. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I think one of the most important and honestly best parts about, you know, tackling the crisis of climate change is that, you know, we can tackle climate change, we can make a positive impact, reduce consumption, reduce our carbon footprint, and we can build green jobs and, you know, build a better economy and, you know, build a better quality of life. So fact is, we do not need to risk the quality and then, you know, and clean air to you know, to make a better life and to create jobs and to make an impact on our planet. So, you know, getting this Clean Air Act passed is about protecting our kids, protecting our families, and it's a positive step in you know, fighting this this immense crisis that all of us face.
Well, it is immense, and that is an ambitious statement to make. Some might say ambitious for an Albany County legislature, you know, local government, who may say, you know, we need to look to the federal government for guidance on this, or, you know, federal leadership for guidance on this. You know, what would you say that the local role in climate change is? What is the average citizen's role?
Look, I think we need to fight this on all fronts, from town government up to the federal side. And there absolutely is a balance on what should be passed at the state and the federal level versus the local. But, you know, I'm proud that Albany County has been a leader in the state on environmental issues when it comes to the styrofoam ban. And I think we had the plastic bead ban a couple of years ago at the county level. And, you know, the fact is the county legislature and our county government is charged with bettering the lives and protecting the citizens here in the county. And so clean air is it's a county issue, and it's not just a state or a federal issue. So I think it's in the interest of our legislature to pass this, and I support it because, you know, fighting air and protecting families and kids and the air around us, it's something we need to do at every level of government.
So as a legislature, do you hope to play a role in environmental legislation issues?
Oh, absolutely. You know, climate change, it's a crisis, and it's going to take all hands on deck, you know, in every facet. We need to reduce consumption. We need to find ways to increase renewable energy. We need to making sure on our development that we're building sustainably, and that, you know, what my hope is on serving the county legislature is that, you know, every term and every year we'll be able to say that we reduce our carbon footprint, you know, in hopefully by steps or bounds or maybe by huge leaps, but we're making an impact and reducing our consumption every year that I'm in office. And that's my hope, Alexis.
And the types of waste fuel that are covered in this law, the tires and the garbage, if they're not being burned, then they're going to a landfill. What are some methods that the Albany County Legislature might use to reduce waste?
Well, you know, following the state's ban of single-use plastic bags, we passed last week in the legislature a 5-cent fee on paper bags. And I think we need to, you know, find good ways where we can, you know, slowly but surely impact just behavioral economics on reducing consumption. And I think we need to work to find ways that, you know, all of... we're just reducing what we're using and packaging and putting things together and, I don't know, getting better public transportation so there's less cars on the road. I don't have any concrete ideas on that yet, to be honest, but I think it comes down to impacting our behavior economically and doing it in little slow but sure steps that everyone can do and make an impact.
And how can citizens of Albany County get involved in this effort?
Come to the legislature meetings, come to public forums like this, find your local Indivisible or activist group that's working on environmental issues and get involved, support your local media and, you know, read your local papers and subscribe and donate to the Sanctuary for Independent Media and, be informed, be active, and involve yourself with, you know, the groups and other citizens that have the same values that you do and working to make an impact.
So I guess one more question. The city of Troy recently reenacted its previously defunct Environmental Conservation Commission, who is charged with researching ways in which to improve the city's conservation efforts. Does Albany County have a commission like that, or do you foresee something like that in the works?
I am honestly not sure. I'll have to look into that. I do not know. And if we don't have something similar, then I think it's something we should look into. But I do not know. Be perfectly honest.
That's okay. And do you see the another bill up tonight is the Straws Upon Request? If that passes, do you see that being expanded to reduce more single-use plastics in the waste stream?
I think so, too. And I don't have the exact numbers, but I believe a lot of the, you know, the plastics in our waste stream are, you know, things like straws that nobody's asking for and really wants and just gets dumped. So I think, you know, that's a piece of legislation that I think is getting at, you know, how we pragmatically and intelligently tackle this issue by having straws and plastics on request rather than just given out. I think that in itself will reduce an immense amount of waste here in the county. So I think that's another good piece of legislation we should pass.
Okay, one more question. Sure. So how do you as a legislature plan to stand up to profit-motivated companies that make money off polluting the air?
I think we need to always work to talk about the economic impact as a whole, because there's no profit for a company that's going to outweigh the economic impacts of what dirty air does to the entire county. And I think we need to work to educate and advocate on that level, and you know, keep banding legislators and activists together to you know, make sure the voices in our community are heard and are louder than the voices of you know, lobbyists for big polluting corporations.
Dustin, thank you so much.
Hey, thanks.
Out in front of the Dover Plains Courthouse, and people were arraigned from last weekend's protest blockade of the Cricket Valley fossil fuel plant. And we're talking with one of the arrestees, though they actually lost his paperwork tonight, Jim Gordon, who's with Extinction Rebellion and one of the people arrested. So Jim, what happened tonight in court, and how are you going to move forward with this?
Well, we're not sure how we'll move forward because they gave us a bogus deal, so to speak, quote-unquote deal, where we would have to plead guilty and do 50 hours of community service in Dutchess County, which would be a hardship. And the smokestack four who climbed the actual smokestacks of the facility, were told they would have to spend 30 days in jail if they pled guilty. So needless to say, we didn't take the deal, and we all have to come back, and it'll be a slow process while we unravel this.
And I also understand that we gave out orders of protection against the plant, basically trying to force people to keep 1,000 feet away from the plant. A lot of people worried where they could drive home tonight, because driving home might be 1,000 feet from the plant. That seemed a little bit unusual.
Well, it's unconstitutional, I think. There's no reason for it. 1,000 feet is, I don't think they thought it through, because you can't drive past it, you can't protest, you can't take a train past it. So I think they just threw a number out to see if it would stick. So our lawyer said that he was going to contest that on grounds of constitutionality and practicality, and I think he'll win that.
And so why did so many people decide to get arrested at this particular plant?
Well, I mean, there's a whole raft of reasons. This plant, for the locals who live in the valley, it's a poison factory. You know, it'll pump poison into the air. It'll pump, I forget the exact millions of tons of carbon products into the air every year, so it'll add to the overall global climate crisis. And that's why I'm here, to support the people who live here and to support the farmers in the area and the school children who would be affected by it. And because we have to change from the fossil foolery, you know, this fossil fuel mentality, this fossil fuel economy has to stop. And we can't go opening fracked gas plants at this point in our history because, frankly, we're on a collision course with suicide. We're heading for extinction. And so as a member of the Extinction Rebellion and as a member of the human race, I'm there to say, stop. We got to come to our senses.
Now, this power plant is, I guess, sort of southeast of Poughkeepsie, maybe 15, 20 miles. But it seems like it's located right next to some farms and wildlife areas and even schools.
Well, it's within a mile of, I believe, two or three schools, at least two and perhaps three, an elementary school, a junior high, and a senior high school, or middle school, as they say up here. In addition, it's next to the Great Swamp, and they want to drain the Great Swamp to cool the plant. So talk about a waste of resources. They're not only going to pump poison into the air from the top, they're going to pull pure water from the ground and run it through the plant and emit it as, you know, tainted steam. You know, the whole fracked gas thing is a whole other thing. They want to use the Iroquois pipeline. So they turn Pennsylvania into a third world country by fracking those people in that land and pump it through this huge pipeline to power people in New York City. the whole thing is just a travesty of justice and a travesty of environmental planning gone wrong. It's a nightmare.
Now, I understand that one of the things everybody's been asked to do is to try to contact Governor Cuomo to urge him to take a step to block the plant from opening. The plant is still under construction. What's our sense of where Governor Cuomo or other state lawmakers are standing on this plan?
Well, I don't know about other lawmakers, but Governor Cuomo, I think, needs to be contacted about this. He has the power to shut this plant down. He has the power to say, no, this cannot open. And he is trying to have a legacy as the most progressive anti-climate crisis governor in the entire country. And this, of course, flies in the face of that. The two do not go together. And this plant was approved long before the climate crisis became, quote-unquote, widely known. Obviously, a lot of us have known that it was coming for a long time. But the approvals for this plant were in 2011 or 2012, and everything has changed since then, including New York State's energy plan. So the idea of opening this, which is in direct contravention of our new energy policy in New York State, is just absurd. And may I add that all the benefits would go to foreigners who own the plant. It's not an American plant. It will create very few local jobs. And so on every level I can imagine, it's a travesty.
Now, we're talking with Jim Gordon, who is with Extinction Rebellion. Jim, what motivated you to join up with Extinction Rebellion?
Well, I was a journalist for a long time writing about climate change, and nobody was listening. I'm 61 now, and I have grandchildren. And I don't want my grandchildren to grow up in a hellscape of a civilization that is dying or, perhaps even, beyond the point of no return. We can still turn it around. In Extinction Rebellion, we talk about regenerative culture. In other words, stop the madness and begin to come back to a sane, progressive, and sustainable and even thriving lifestyle. And we can do that. We still have time to do that. So I'm here to help make that happen.
Jim, anything else you'd like to add?
I think that Extinction Rebellion or your local climate action group, everybody has to get involved. It's something that really for the life of us, I know I sound overdramatic, but if you look at the facts, we need to start acting and we all need to start acting. We don't all have to get arrested, but we all have to do something.
Jim Gordon. Next, we talk with Janet Apuzzo, one of the people arrested. Janet, what motivated you to take a stand against Crystal Valley?
We need to end our dependence on fossil fuels and the idea that we are using fracked gas to generate electricity in New York State when Cuomo had said that we need to end fracked gas infrastructure and as well as fossil fuel infrastructure to end it is imperative for our future because of the global climate chaos that we are encroaching.
And so what motivated you to actually get arrested as opposed to just write another petition or letter to the governor?
Well, I had been writing a lot of petitions and I had been going to a lot of protests and protest after protest and petition after petition and nothing gets changed. So it's very frustrating and it's very depressing and it's very demoralizing. And in order to feel like I'm taking a stand so that something can happen and people's eyes are open and actions are changed, I need to be able to put myself on the line a little bit. And that's what I've decided to do.
Well, thank you very much, Janet Apuzzo. So we're talking with Ben Schwartz, who's an area farmer. And there's been a lot of local concern raised about this power plant called Crooked Valley. Ben, what are some of the concerns that residents have about this particular power plant?
First off, residents are concerned about their kids, just because the middle school, high school, and elementary school are all within less than a mile of the plant, and the plant does have a lot of emissions that are coming out. Another concern is the swamp, the Great Swamp, which contains the Swamp River, which the plant is built on. There's a lot of concern about acidifying of the swamp due to the sulfuric acid that's being emitted by the plant. There's also a lot of concern about lack of consent from local communities. The plant borders on Western Connecticut, which already has a lot of air problems. A lot of the towns in Western Connecticut are up in arms because they didn't know about the plant till last year. Meanwhile, the plant had been passed by the Department of Environmental Conservation of New York State in 2011.
So 2011, that would have still have been Governor Andrew Cuomo. What are you trying to get the governor and others to do about the plan at this point? I understand they're trying to open it in a few months.
I would say follow their Andrew Cuomo's own legislation. There was a bill passed in the New York State Senate just a few months ago that said that we need to get off all